the 20-yard line, a 4th and 15 coming up with a minute 18 to play. The Rebels with a stop will do all they need to win in the 23-20 lead. Daniels with the ball on the 20 on the far side hash as Neal to the left. He'll drop back to pass on 4th down. He tries to move it up the middle. He's tripped up. Antonio Boyle brings him to the ground, and the Rebels hold strong on 4th and 15 with 70 seconds to play. They lead 23-20. No timeouts remaining for Kansas, and the Rebels look like they're going to hold on the road.
On ESPN Las Vegas.
Rebels. Haven't heard that since I was at that game.
Okay, calm down. What'd you eat in Baltimore?
Oh, yeah. Sorry,
Danny. Oh, my God.
Sorry, Danny.
Danny, it's unbelievable. I told you, Danny.
I'm there.
No chance.
To work. I'm there to work. I can't.
Did you eat?
Yeah, chicken sandwich.
Told you, Danny. I told you. No chance.
Ed, I just said don't no tell chance. Me you got a chicken sandwich or a
chicken
turkey sandwich.
Yeah,
or
I know.
Just get anything.
I told you, Danny. There's no chance.
There's no chance I was going out to find him.
He was in Baltimore for like 3 days.
No, I wasn't there that long.
When'd you get there?
You got there Saturday morning.
When'd you leave?
Really late yesterday.
That's 3 days. Yeah, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Yeah,
you probably ate like 5 meals in Baltimore.
Sorry, Danny. At the game, they did serve hot dogs.
That's what they served at the game?
Yeah, and like they had breakfast. I mean, it was a good time. No, Baltimore did press box did well.
With hot dogs? What do you mean did well?
No, like they had breakfast and they had lunch. They're very nice. They're very nice in the Baltimore press box.
Breakfast at a 1 p.m. kickoff?
Oh, yeah, because you get there at about 10.
Hold on. These are conflicting information. The food does not sound nice when you just say hot dogs.
No, but like breakfast, they had eggs and stuff. And
that does not sound nice.
That's very nice.
You could have gotten that at your hotel.
So Allegiant Stadium is like, what, an 8, 9, 10 in terms of how they treat media? How was Baltimore in terms of food?
I mean, in terms of that, 8, 9, 10. Hey, look, anything is nice. We're there to work. We're there to cover a game.
Ed, you're giving coach answers.
Right.
This is brutal.
We're there to cover a game. Why are you protecting the Baltimore press box food? I'm ready to get my notebook out
and draw my little figures on it for both teams. And do some research and have my binoculars looking down at the guys.
Why are you protecting the Baltimore press box food? I was down there watching Jackson Powers Johnson work out.
We thought he was going to be active because of how much Vinny and I watched him work out before the game.
I thought you were going to go somewhere good.
I'm sorry, Danny. I apologize.
God.
I apologize.
He was there for three days.
I didn't come through for you.
And then he comes back and does coach speak.
It's unbelievable.
So you said no.
To what?
To crab cakes.
What do you mean I said no?
I thought that's what he...
No, he thought that you were not going to do anything and do exactly what you did.
I didn't think you'd go.
I had faith in you.
No chance.
Yeah. I'm surprised he had barbecue in Kansas City. That's the real shocker. Somebody else had to drive him there.
It's true.
Here we go.
I wasn't driving.
The First Bite.
Who is left in the Mountain West?
UNLV.
Spartans. The Spartans of San Jose State.
Air Force could be headed to the AAC. Pete Thamel reported yesterday that Air Force has emerged as a serious target to be added to the American Athletic Conference. Thamel said that Air Force had talked to the AAC earlier this year. So before the four other Mountain West schools announced that they're leaving for the Pac-12, Air Force had already talked to the AAC. The AAC has Army and Navy in football, so they already have two of the three service academies. I guess this would make a little bit of sense as well. So potentially, there has been no announcement from Air Force or the AAC about this officially happening, but it sounds like it could be close to happening. The first thing I wanted to ask you, Ed, there's a buyout if you leave the Mountain West.
With 12 months notice, yeah.
It's roughly $18 million. Right. It's triple the revenue, the television revenue fee that you get from the conference. So it's roughly $18 to $19 million. Is Air Force going to pay $18 million to go from a group of five to a group of five?
I don't know about that because we've heard from the Mountain West schools that those guys are going to get help.
Right.
But that's from the Pac-12, from Washington State and Oregon State, who have a lot more money.
Yeah, they've got NCAA tournament revenue.
Yeah,
they've got
a
Rose
ton of money
Bowl
to
money.
Help out.
Like they've just got
so
money left over.
Does the AAC have money left over from anything?
I don't think so.
That they'll say we'll pick up like 8 of the 18.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Do they want Air Force that badly?
And that's the other part that's interesting. Why would the AAC want Air Force?
I mean, enough to have all three service academies, but is that
I saw
important?
Nicole Auerbach tweet out that there could be some creative ways to increase revenue with all three service academies. What is that? I don't understand. Nobody watches Army, Navy, and Air Force play football, except for when Army and Navy get to play
all by themselves
in a dumb week
day,
that shouldn't exist.
On the same
right?
day.
That's it. No, nobody else watches Army or Navy or Air Force. Any other game.
Unless you're playing Notre Dame or something
season.
Like that.
Right, but they're not going to be playing Notre Dame in the AAC. So I don't understand from the AAC's perspective how this helps them
gain revenue, added revenue at all.
Yeah. And like outside of football, adding Air Force and like men's basketball is a drain on
drain wreck.
Yeah, like that's bad. So I just don't quite understand why the AAC would want Air Force badly enough. I guess if the Mountain West is falling apart and you were like, they're out there as like a free agent, sure, I guess they could you could make that argument. But I just this one doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Like, I just don't really get it from Air Force's perspective. Well, I do get it from Air Force's perspective that the Mountain West is going to completely fall apart and they're sort of securing their future. But I don't really get it from the AAC standpoint as to why. What do they want with Air Force?
What the big deal is to put all three service academies together.
Yeah. I don't understand why that would be something that you would desire so much. The other thing I wanted to ask you, and I know you don't really answer this, but do you think Air Force is choosing the AAC over the Pac-12 at all?
Ooh. Well,
like I know they weren't included
in this
initial four. I think
they were choosing the AAC over the Mountain West earlier this year, if Pete Thamel's right on his reporting. But are they choosing the Pac-12 over the AAC?
Like if they were given the option to both, the AAC and the Pac-12 that's currently six, said, hey, Air Force, we both want you.
I mean, I'd go to the Pac-12.
Over the AAC now?
I think it's going to be a better conference. But there might be reasons we don't know why they want to join the other service academies also.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a whole different ballgame when you get into the service academies and what they want and what they think is important. And maybe they think it's important to join the other two. But they've been away from them for a long time. So why are they now suddenly, before this Pac-12 move, going to the AAC months ago or whenever Pete Thamel reported and wanting to get out?
Yeah. Have they ever all three been in the same conference? I don't think they have.
No, because I think Air Force has been with these teams for a long time.
Yeah, Air Force has been in the Mountain West forever. Right. And Army and Navy have been independent before.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, it's not like it's some, we used to be in the same conference and then we got broken up 30 years ago.
Like
and
right.
So it's weird. From UNLV's perspective, do you think this makes it more or less likely that UNLV ends up in the Pac-12?
Because Air Force doesn't?
Yes.
I mean, I was surprised, and we can go over some of the reasons because I wasn't here when you talked about it, that they didn't go with one of the four. Now, you know, reasons were given out for other four, like, you know, TV markets and however you want to explain it of why Fresno State and Colorado State went before them. I didn't get your thoughts on that, why they didn't go.
I, from a Pac-12 standpoint, I could San Diego State and Boise State, I completely understand.
Those are no-brainers.
Colorado State, UNLV, I think you could argue either one as to which one you'd rather have, right? I don't think it's a huge mistake to say Colorado State, we'd rather have them than UNLV. I don't get the Fresno State one. I don't get it. And I know they've been better at football in recent years, in the last 20 years or whatever, but I don't get the Fresno State one.
I mean, is it because they get $42,000 for Sacramento State and UNLV gets $22,000 for most teams they play?
Maybe.
But is it that one, would that one reason overcome everything else to take Fresno State over UNLV? I don't know.
Apparently it did.
I didn't get it. I didn't get Fresno State. And you know, Colorado State's going to claim the Denver market. I don't know how much. They don't have the Denver market. But they're going to claim it.
Right.
On-campus football facility, very nice one, you know, almost a brand new one. But I don't know. I was surprised that they weren't one of the four when I saw Colorado State and Fresno State. The other two are no-brainers. Those are easy.
Right.
San Diego State, Southern California market, I mean, they've been really good at most everything. Boise, the football brand. I read or heard someone say, you know, you turn on ESPN at 9 o'clock at night, it's Boise you're going to watch.
Yeah, they're the best non-power football brand in the country.
Right, right. Exactly. So that's an easy one.
Yeah. Do you think from the Air Force AAC perspective, because we saw the Pac-12 take four Mountain West teams, and listen, at the end of the day, UNLV might end up in the Pac-12. That might ultimately happen.
They need two more, if not more.
But they weren't in the initial four.
Right.
And I think that's a bad sign. No matter what, I think that's a bad sign. And now, again, not official, but Air Force is talking to the AAC, and Air Force might be leaving for the AAC. We haven't heard about UNLV potentially leaving for the AAC. Do you think this is also the AAC saying we don't want UNLV? Because there is a scenario where the Mountain West completely erodes, and the AAC goes in and picks up a couple of Mountain West members like Air Force, and they might say, hey, we want UNLV too. That could be a saving grace for UNLV at the end of the day. But if we now have the Pac-12 saying we want these four, the AAC saying we want Air Force, nobody wants UNLV?
I would be surprised. I would be surprised.
I am too.
I'm surprised at this. That, you know, given how the city's growing, the professional sports, I know what's at the 40th market.
Danny, hold on. We looked this up last 38? Week. Were we 38 when we looked up Nielsen rankings?
We were 32.
32. We're 32. Moving up in the world.
Yeah.
We're flying.
That's a big difference from 40.
Yeah, we've gone
stop
up.
Moving here, people. Calm down.
Because I forget who we were comparing to, but
Fresno.
They were 30, like 35 or something spots below us. They were in the mid-60s.
Right. Yeah, right.
Yeah, they weren't close.
I don't get Fresno. I mean, maybe because they, if it's just because they get more people to football games.
Well, Tyler has a thought that it's got to be a state school. So
yeah,
Nevada State has to add football, and then they'll be invited to the Pac-12.
Yeah, like Utah State has a better chance at the Pac-12 right now than UNLV, just because they have state in their name.
Well, I'll tell you what, this company that did the vetting on Navigate on the Pac-12 hired this company to vet them and to rank them, and obviously we saw how they ranked the top four. I'm fascinated to see where UNLV was ranked. I mean, it's
God,
not out
they
there.
They weren't fifth.
Well, it's not out there, and I don't know who was fifth. I mean, we don't know that because they haven't announced it, and I don't think they will announce that. They just, you know, this Navigate company did rank them. I know that behind the scenes and vetted them. I don't know where UNLV was ranked, to tell you the truth.
Okay, on the idea that a third party ranked the schools and the Pac-12 used that to go add members. Since the Pac-12 now has six, and they have to get to eight, right? They've got to be at eight to be a real conference.
College football playoff, for tournaments, everything, championships, everything.
Does that mean there was a giant gap between four and five?
There could have been, because if that's the case, if there wasn't a giant gap, why didn't you just take the six and have an eight, and then you can add more later, or you can just say no, we're the eight.
Yeah, if four was Fresno, five was UNLV, six was Air Force, and this ranking was like, hey, they're all pretty close. Like, these are all, you know, they're all about the same. I think you would have just added all six and said, here's our eight schools.
And we're a conference.
And if we want to get to nine or 10, we can do that in the future. But I'm guessing, since they only took four and they need two more, that whatever this ranking was said Fresno's four, and then there's a big gap before you get to five.
If there is a big gap, maybe they are looking elsewhere.
Yeah, to Memphis and
Tulane
and stuff
and
like that.
People like that.
Well, quick other thing on Air Force and the AAC. Maybe not, but if Air Force is going to the AAC, do you think that signals that they believe Memphis and Tulane will stay in the AAC?
I would hope they do.
Because if you're Air Force, I know it's a big conference and there's other schools. Like the AAC will still survive
Memphis
if they lose two. But
yeah, but you don't want to lose those two.
It's two of your best.
Right.
Like if you're Air Force, you're really going to leave. You're really going to pay $18 million to join that conference where Tulsa becomes the best team? I don't even know. Tulsa's the best brand at that point. Like, you're going to pay $18 million for that? That would seem kind of foolish if you're Air Force. So, like, if I was Air Force, I wouldn't really want to join that unless I knew
that the two best teams are staying.
One of two things. The Mountain West is completely falling apart and I need a conference, period. Or that Memphis and Tulane are
going to
stay around. Now, therefore, the conference is better. I don't know. Very weird. I don't know what's going to happen in the next 5 months because UNLV is in a weird spot that I think they deserve better. Like,
oh,
I think they should be
I think
a Pac-12
member. I think they should have gone to the Pac-12 in the beginning.
Yeah, so we'll see if that actually happens, and we'll see if Air Force ends up in the American Athletic Conference here in the very near future. Coming up next, we'll get into the Raiders because, unfortunately, they don't get to face Bryce Young.
Yeah, I think he's just growing. I mean, he really showed up in some critical moments for us. But what I love, man, is the toughness, the physicality that he runs with, his play style, you know, down there, you know, caught that ball in the third quarter and, you know, dragging the defender for a couple more yards to get us to the one-yard line. You can see that kind of, like, energized our whole team and got him going. I think it's really huge. And I talk about both of our tight ends, you know, Big Mike and him. When we got 12 personnel in there, those are tough matchups. And when we get not just Brock going, get Big Mike going, I think we'll be a really good offensive team.
You're listening to the Press Box on 100.9 FM and 1100 AM.
The Panthers play the Raiders. First home game of the year for the Raiders this weekend. Bryce Young will not be the starting quarterback. It will be Andy Dalton because the Panthers have benched Bryce Young after two games. Is Andy Dalton going to beat the Raiders?
I think Andy Dalton has a better chance than Bryce Young would have.
He is 3-0 against them.
Raiders got screwed.
God, look at that.
Yeah.
3-0 all time against the Raiders. I didn't know that.
Got screwed here. Do you think the Panthers should have benched Bryce Young?
I mean, he was so bad. And I don't watch either Panther game, so I don't know how much
good
was
for
it
you.
On,
no, that's good for you. You shouldn't watch
how
him.
Much was on him. Have you watched either game?
No, God, no.
No. So how much was it? His numbers weren't very good. His numbers are terrible. It's interesting because as the number one pick, and I know you have it in here, if it was really Dave Canales' decision, it had to be more people than him.
So yesterday Dave Canales said...
It was his decision,
but that he did talk to the general manager and I think like a VP or something like that. Like he did, he it was
had
his
to
choice,
it.
But he went
it's number
and
one
to
pick in the draft a year ago.
Right. I don't believe him. Or
you don't believe he talked to people?
No. I don't believe it was his decision.
Oh.
Or I don't believe he made the decision without some sort of pressure or threat. Because here's the thing. There's one out for why you bench Bryce Young in this scenario. And that is if you believe, as the head coach, you believe Bryce Young's confidence is so shaken that he just needs to not play for a little bit. He just needs to step back from it. Because has anything gone right for Bryce Young since he's become an NFL player? Like, it's been bad from the start. So, like, if you believe Bryce Young just needs to step back for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, whatever, and just not be...
And just watch.
Right. Okay, his confidence, we got to figure out a way to where he's just not getting just mentally broken every Sunday. Fine. But outside of that, the only reason you bench Bryce Young for Andy Dalton is to win a couple more games with the 2024 Panthers.
Or hope to.
And why on earth would you want to win more games with the 2024 Panthers? Nobody at any point has ever talked about this team going to the playoffs. They're already 0-2. Nobody believes this team is just a little bit better quarterback play away from the playoffs. Right. Andy Dalton's going to give you what? Below average quarterback play?
Yeah.
That's not going to make this a playoff team at the end of the day. They're going to be more competitive. Andy Dalton is almost certainly going to be better than Bryce Young. But this Panther season is not about making the playoffs or winning games. This Panther season was about, can we figure out if Bryce Young is any good?
Right.
Can we extract anything from guy we just took first overall last year? And to bench him two games in is moronic. It is incredibly short-sighted, which is why I wonder, did David Tepper make any sort of threat, put any sort of pressure on Dave Canales, who's a first-year head coach, where Dave Canales thinks he's coaching for his job right now? Because if Canales thinks he's coaching for his job after 2 weeks, then absolutely you bench Bryce Young and bring in Andy Dalton and hope you can get to six wins and save your job because your owner's a lunatic who might actually fire you if you suck this year. Even though everybody in the world expected the Panthers to be awful,
to be bad
this season. It makes zero sense to do it as a head coach unless the owner is like threatening to fire you over this season.
Yeah, and Tepper's the kind of nut job who might already be willing to fire his coach two games in.
Probably one of the worst owners in the NFL. Yes. In all of our sports, he's probably one of the worst.
And weren't there rumors that he kind of forced that pick?
He was involved in the process. I don't remember if it was forced or whatever.
But
yes.
He doesn't want to take the blame for picking Bryce Young.
I don't think
Tepper
wants to take the blame for anything.
Right.
So he's going to put it on all of his head coaches.
He'll put it on everyone else.
So I just, like, this to me is one of the prime examples of NFL teams refuse to be honest with themselves and where they are, and are as reactionary as fans are to situations and yes. players and everything.
Well, I wanted, for whatever reason, I wanted Antonio Pierce to be faced with the same fourth down decision as the week before, because I think he would have gone for it this time. Off the pressure, off what everyone else had said.
Well,
I really did.
He did go for it on a fourth down in that
game.
Yes,
he did.
And Devontae Adams dropped a touchdown
pass. Yeah, he dropped a touchdown pass, and he could have gotten it. He was shaded a little bit. It was a drop. But I wanted him in the exact same situation.
After doubling down, saying that, no, we wanted that, we got what we wanted.
Because I think he would have gone for it.
Yeah, because it's an obvious go for it situation that everybody except Antonio Pierce apparently agreed with. Yeah, so I think he would have, and the pressure would have been a big reason why. But I Andy Dalton should make the Panthers better. Absolutely. The Raiders are going to face a better team.
He's played well enough to where you're going to face a better quarterback.
But this season for the Panthers is not about being slightly better than terrible in 2024. This season was supposed to be about, is Bryce Young anything?
They needed to find out, because if not, they needed to move on.
Right, and they're getting rid of that after two games is not great. And by the way, if you've already decided the guy's terrible, play him in the rest of the games and go 0-17 and get the first pick in the draft. Like, the downside here is that Andy Dalton is competent enough that you win five games and you're picking fifth.
Right.
And, you know, like, that's – I just don't think it's the right move at all. Again, the one out is that – maybe Bryce Young's confidence is just so shaken that Canales said, I just can't put this guy in a football game because he's broken, and we want to give him some time off and try it again a little bit later.
Do you think they try it again?
Oh, that's a good question. Probably.
I mean, is he done in Carolina?
I think you have to try it again if you're Carolina, right? Like, what's Andy Dalton going to give you? You're gonna lose four in a row with Andy Dalton at some point this year. Hell, they might lose their first four with him. That's not a good team. They're gonna lose their first four with Andy Dalton and be like, all right, I guess we're going back to Bryce Young. So, and by the way, they shouldn't be afraid to go back to him. Go back to him if Andy Dalton's bad. See what he is.
What's the down point?
Yeah, it'd be stupid not to. Oh, also, by the way, Raiders should trade for him, Bryce Young, today.
Really?
Yes.
They should trade for him. He should be the quarterback?
And he should start every game for the rest of the season for the Raiders. Yes. Give him a week or two to get up to speed. But yes, 100%.
So they can have the first pick in the draft?
Well, yeah, that'd be great, right? It'd be phenomenal for them. But also give, here's 13 games. Is this guy any good? Do we have a quarterback of the future? No? All right. He sucks? All right, we're picking first or second or third or whatever it is. I don't think Bryce Young's going to be any good. Every stat I've seen, the guy's terrible.
Right.
Like, worst. He's got the worst EPA in the league already. Right? He's awful. But he was a first overall pick, and as far as future prospects goes, I'd take 13 games looking at that than whatever Gardner Minshew is. Although, second in the league in passing yards, first in completion percentage.
Yeah.
Guy's a superstar.
And you have someone on the in the quarterback room already who's the same age and making a third of the money. So why trade for him?
Who, Bryce Young?
Yeah.
What, you're talking about Aiden O'Connell?
Yeah.
What are you doing with Aiden O'Connell? He wasn't good enough to beat out Gardner Minshew.
Yeah, but he clearly was better than Bryce Young last year.
Yeah, and that's clearly his ceiling. Aiden O'Connell is not the whole point of the Raiders team right now should be, who's the quarterback of the future?
Yeah, but we...
That should be all they're trying to figure out.
But also what we heard during the offseason is Canales is the quarterback whisperer. And he can't do anything with Bryce Young.
He might have screamed instead of whispering, and that was it.
He gave up after 2 weeks. Yeah, I know. I don't think Bryce Young's any good. I'd rather have him as my quarterback right now than Minshew and O'Connell.
Just for draft sake?
No, in 5 years, who has a better chance of being a top 10 quarterback in the league? Bryce Young, Gardner Minshew, or Aiden O'Connell?
Of those three?
It's Bryce Young. He's the only one of the three that has any chance to ever be a top 10 quarterback in football.
Bryce Young might not be on a roster.
I don't think he will either.
The other two will.
Probably not. Maybe in the CFL. I don't think any of them will, but there's only one of them that has any legitimate shot, and it's Bryce Young. The other two will never, ever be anywhere close. Minshew's been in the league for like 6 years. Never, ever close. He could only get like $12 million. What did he get? $12 million a year? That's it.
I think 15, didn't he?
Yeah, whatever it is. They're not good. Neither is Bryce Young, but he's got a little bit of a shot. The Raiders should not be trying to win.
Whoa.
This is not about trying to win in 2024.
Tell that to their defense.
They're going
to
win. They're going to win some games.
Too many.
They're going to win some games.
Right. Way too many.
Yeah, they'll pick 14 again.
Brutal.
13.
All right. Coming up next, David Roth joins the show.
He is adorned in flannel and still might not have a building super. He has a turtle who loves to eat rocks. David Roth from Defector is here to tell us about his uninstalled appliances. Subscribe to The Distraction, a multitude production for Defector. Listen to The Distraction wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, David.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Fantastic. Have you painted your wall?
No.
Oh.
It needs to happen, though, because my cousin is going to be staying here in a few weeks. We're going to let her, I think somehow another person in my family seeing how we live is the breaking point.
That's the shame.
Like, if it's just me and my wife, we're used to it. We're like, yeah, that wall's got a, I don't know, it's like a birthmark. Just, you know, we love it the same as we would if it looked normal. But yeah, if I'm going to have somebody that I see two times a year sleeping in there while we're out of town, I don't want her to get the wrong idea, or the right idea, I guess it would be, technically.
All right, I hope it goes unpainted and you just have to explain what exactly is going on. It'll be
fun. Everybody loves hearing about co-op buildings and how hard it is to do stuff in them.
Are we going to get, like, let's say, you know, 2 months from now, the Brewers win the World Series and everyone look back and just say, I guess they were good all season?
They are definitely the good team that I forget about the most. Like, I've been sort of going back over, I've been corrected multiple times in the work Slack where I was like, it's like the Dodgers and everyone else. And they're like, now that the Brewers have the same number of wins, dude. Like, you just forgot that the NL Central was a thing again. You sort of, and, you know, it's a weaker division. They did get to play some, you know, more mediocre teams. It's not like they, you know, were power stacking the White Sox on their schedule or whatever. But, yeah, the thing with them, too, is that as good as they are, like, a lot of their best players are people that I feel like even the top, you know, 2-3% of fans, like, don't really know who Tobias Myers is. That, like, they've really, like, optimized their pitching for maximum efficiency, but also maximum anonymity, which is a weird and kind of sneaky type of competitor to be.
The postseason rotation of Freddie Peralta, Colin Ray, and Tobias Myers is going to win the World Series. It's going to be great.
Colin Ray is amazing, too, because I remember him being like a bulk guy for the Padres or something. Like, I'm probably conflating him with a few other dudes, but I guess you have to give him credit as a, you know, a developmental win for stuff like that. But being able to more or less pull freely available 27-year-old pitchers off the curb and make them into people that you would have starting in a short series, you got to tip your cap. I mean, that is when the Rays do it, everybody's like, well, you know, they're creeps and we hate them, but they can roll. The Brewers, again, it's somehow like they're forgettable enough. And apparently it's a wonderful city. It's a great place to see a ballpark. I'm not saying it's like, you know, Milwaukee's fault, but it is, they're doing the same stuff that all the other, you know, sort of high level front offices do, but everybody just kind of thinks of them as the team where, like, I don't know, Jeff Cirillo is still there.
Mets have that one game lead now, thanks to the Dodgers, two in a row against the Braves.
Yeah, exactly. Good looking out.
You sweating it out, or are you feeling good?
I'm worried about the Lindor thing. I don't think it's nice to be able to play the Nats, and the Mets have two more games of that before things start getting really difficult again. But Lindor hurt his back. Sort of, I guess, re-aggravated a back injury that he'd apparently been dealing with for weeks. And they're starting to sort of do the Mets thing with injury return estimations, which is a guy plays one inning, leaves the game, is reportedly available to pinch hit for the next 9 days, and then finally is placed on the IR and then shows up again 2 weeks later. Obviously, we don't have enough baseball left for that. So right now they have, and I think also it's, you know, because it's Lindor and because he's the big dog in the clubhouse, I think he's just basically going to say when he's ready to play. But even he is not saying that he'll be back in the Nat series. And if he's, you know, if he misses 5 games and some of those games are against, you know, the Brewers and the Braves, then they're in a tough spot. But right now, they're still, you know, for a team that hasn't really played well for a week, they're still competitive. They need to hit, and I'm sweating it out for that reason. At this point, I've, like, more or less accepted that Sean Manaea and Luis Severino are kind of good, even though I don't always feel confident watching them. But if you were to look at the Mets lineup, like, just the group that they were putting out there yesterday, you would not instantly look at them and be like, yes, that's a wild card team right there, man, even relative to the decimated Braves.
You finish hard, Philadelphia, Atlanta, Milwaukee.
Yeah, it's not, and I mean, the thing with this is that they had, I mean, it's the schedule, so it all balances out. But the Mets have played generally quite well against good teams in during this last stretch of success. I mean, we took two or three from the Orioles. Like, they've played solid. They also dropped series against the Rockies, against the A's. Like, all of that stuff, when it was happening at the time, I was already kind of writing it off and, you know, rocketing through the, you know, different stages of grief about the season. And then they kind of got good again. But at some point, you're going to look back at it and be like, why did they have so much trouble with the Marlins? Like, why did they lose two series to the Rockies? I'm hoping that that'll be, like, much later in October than, you know, like, if that happens in a week and a half, I'll be upset. You'll hear it.
Are you paying extra to sit in the purple grimace seat at Citi Field?
I kind of like the grimace seat. There's been some dissent in the group chat of 50 mentally ill Mets fans that I spend some of my day in about how people feel about it. And there's people that are kind of mad. They're like, it's an ad, it's corny, it's a forced meme, whatever. All of which, is true. But the Mets, and this is like the thing that I've been sort of trying to underline in my role as, I wouldn't say elder statesman, but like older idiot in that group chat, is that like the Mets, for the entire time that the Wilpons owned the team, avoided anything that looked like fun as a matter of course. Like, they just, that wasn't what people were in the ballpark for. You were there to buy concessions and then leave. And I think at this point, even if it is a little goofy, it's still Grimace. I like looking at Grimace. I've liked looking at Grimace my whole life. It's funny that he's shaped like that. And then also, you know, it's this, the Jose Iglesias OMG thing, like, all of that has felt decently authentic. If another team had that kind of energy going, I would assume that they had stumbled upon some sort of winning formula. Because it's the Mets, I'm more suspicious, but I feel like, what the hell, you put one purple seat in your upper deck. Like, no one's going to get that mad about it. And I saw multiple people taking selfies of themselves with it yesterday and putting it on the timeline. That was against, for a game against the Nats on a Monday night. If you can get people excited enough to go to the stadium for that reason, then you've already accomplished something that the Wilpons didn't in 2.5 decades of ownership.
Do you think the Tigers are actually going to make the playoffs?
I don't, but it's like hard not to be convinced by the last few weeks. I think it would depend on the Twins really self-destructing in a way that, like, right now, they have their healthy guys. Their injured guys are healthy. And that version of the Twins, like the version that is like Byron Buxton, Royce Lewis, Carlos Correa, is good. But that version is also, you know, you get 70 games of it per year and you don't know where they're going to be. If they can stack them up over the next few weeks, like, then I think they should be able to get into the playoffs. But I don't know. I'm excited to see that the Tigers are doing stuff, especially because I wrote their essay for the Baseball Prospectus annual last year. And usually if your team is getting assigned to me for the Baseball Prospectus essay, it's because like the editors of the annual are trying to make me mad and they identified that your team is depressing and they gave it to me. Like, this is, they've admitted as much to me. Like, I know that this is true. But the Tigers, it seemed like they had been so bad for so long and they'd been stacking these, like, you know, the bunch of like first overall picks and none of them exactly panned out. But the idea of like Riley Green, Spencer Torkelson, all those guys being like just adequate enough to get them over, I like that. I like that as a storyline. I just don't know that you want to be depending on Spencer Torkelson to make up maximum ground during a playoff race, right?
All right, David, I hope you can find a Grimace fathead to cover up your unpainted wall. I think that would be the way to go.
That bad a color match. I should actually look into that. I think that's the sort of thing. I don't know, you know, how you would do it, but that's the sort of thing that you would surprise your wife with,
yes.
Right?
Yes, Grimace.
She comes home from work, sees it. Great. All right, cool. I'll try that. Thanks for the idea.
He's David Roth from Defector. Good luck with that.
Thanks, David.
I appreciate it. Talk to you. Bye.
So there is David Roth from Defector. And I don't know where the Tigers came from, but they're a game and a half out of a playoff spot now. Yeah. Like, the AL6 playoff teams, it's kind of been...
And the Mariners are two back.
Yeah, it's kind of been set for the most part, and all of a sudden the Tigers are like, yeah, what if we just win every game? Also, just because this is funny, looking at the American League wildcard standings, Detroit, Seattle, Boston, Tampa, Toronto, Texas. All those teams are 8 games or fewer from the last wild card spot. And then there's Oakland, who's 14 and a half out of the last wild card spot. The Angels are pretty bad. They're 19 out of the last wild card spot. And then the White Sox are 43 and a half
games out of the last wild card spot.
And they've won three in a row.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're 43 and a half out of a playoff spot. The next worst, the Angels, who are just awful, a bad baseball team, are only 19 out compared to 43
30
and a
below
half.
500.
And again, they've won three games in a row. It's ridiculous. The Marlins, who are awful and in the National League, they're only 27 out. They're the worst team in the National League. They're only 27 out, over 40 games out. They're going to miss the playoffs by over 40 games this year. It's ridiculous. Coming up next here on ESPN Las Vegas, how the hell did the Eagles lose to the Falcons? Behind the scenes, really quick, Danny spent that entire break telling us about Angel Reese getting a deal with Reese's the Cereal to be on the box and did not have any sound pulled, and then in the last second pulled some random Monday Night Football highlight of Drake London scoring the game-winning touchdown and was very proud of himself.
I had it pulled. I just forgot to lay it in.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Listen to you over there. Good job. I'm proud of you.
Thanks.
Nobody would have known if I hadn't said anything either.
Yeah.
But anytime you fist pump over there, I'm going to bring it up.
All right.
It's great. Last night, the Falcons beat the Eagles on Monday Night Football. Ed, I know you did not watch much of this because you had a flying travel trip coming back that was
storms,
not ideal.
Storms throughout North Carolina.
So I'm going to take you through the Eagles making one of the dumbest, not the dumbest because Antonio Pierce's week one decision will probably be there, but one of the worst fourth down decisions of the year. Fourth quarter, Eagles are up by 3 points. It's fourth and three inside the Atlanta 10. With under a minute 45 to go, Atlanta has no more timeouts, and the Eagles elected to kick a field goal to go up six. Atlanta got the ball, drove down, scored a touchdown, and won the game by 1 point. Okay. The ESPN model, Seth Walder tweeted this out, that their model would have suggested to go for it in that situation, even if it was fourth and nine. That fourth and three was an obvious go for it situation because if you get it, the game is over. You win the game. You run the clock out or you score a touchdown and you go up by two possessions. But the game is over if you get that first down. The other team doesn't get the ball. If you don't get it, the other team gets the ball inside their own 10 and is going to have to go 90-plus yards to beat you. And then there's the game theory aspect, which I don't know if there's any math to this, but when a team is down six, they know they have to score a touchdown. And if they do score a touchdown, you lose. If a team is down three, we see this all the time, they're going to play to get into field goal range, not to score the touchdown.
Score the touchdown to win the game.
Atlanta probably just kicks a field goal if they're down three last night, even if they even drive down the field, and you go to overtime. They should have gone for this unbelievably easy decision that Philadelphia screwed up in that game. And here's what I don't understand. What is Nick Sirianni's actual process for fourth down decisions? Because early in that game, they had a fourth and four at the Atlanta 9-yard line. They went for it, didn't get it. Second quarter, they had a fourth and three at the Atlanta 41. They went for it, they got it. So two fourth and five or less, they went for it, they were one for two. But then in the third quarter, they had a fourth and three on the Atlanta 6, and they kicked a field goal. And then in the fourth quarter, fourth and three inside the 10, and they kicked the field goal. So four scenarios where the win probability says you should go for it, and they went on two of the four. I don't understand what his process is because he's clearly not super conservative where it's like, we got to kick in all situations. And he's not super aggressive where he's like, we got to go for it in all situations. I don't understand what the hell his thought process is.
Is the last drive when they kicked the field goal when Saquon dropped the ball?
Yes, this is the very next play. They third and three, Saquon has the game over if he catches the ball because he's going to get the first down and he dropped it. Yeah. Which, by the way, if you're going to throw it on third and three, which I got no problem with it because if you get the first down, the game is over. But if you're going to throw it on third and three, you should be willing to go for it on fourth and three. Like in that scenario, you need 3 yards to win the game. Doesn't matter if you throw an incompletion on one of the two plays, but you have two plays to get 3 yards. Run your two best plays. I don't care if they're passing plays or running plays, and get the first down. And they ran the first one.
I would have also thought two running plays to Saquon could get you 3 yards.
I think you just run the quarterback sneak twice in a row, to be completely honest with you. But
especially the way he was running last night.
But the play call for Saquon was great. It was a perfect play call. Saquon just dropped the ball. Like, catch the ball, Saquon, and you win the game. But then go for it on the 4th and 3. Hell, run the same damn play. Like, I just don't get that entire process from the Eagles. I don't know what's going on there. To sometimes be aggressive, sometimes not be, and then not be in like the most critical part. I don't know. I don't get what Nick Sirianni's doing when he makes those decisions, because they clearly have something.
He knows.
Right. They clearly have something going on where they know, hey, some of these 4th and 3s or 4th and 4s, we should be going, but not all of them.
All of them.
I don't get it. I don't understand what exactly they're doing there. Also, I wanted to point out, because nobody ever complains about converted 4th downs. Atlanta, in that game, their first touchdown, on that drive, they went for it on 4th and 4 from their own 47-yard line. They got the first down and then scored a touchdown on the very next play. So nobody ever brings it up when you convert a 4th down or, you know, in a drive and then you score later. Nobody ever complains about that. But Atlanta, in part, won that game because earlier they went for it on a 4th and 4, got it, and then scored on the very next play. Yeah, that's part of the reason why they won the game. Also, Saquon Barkley. Week 1, oh my God, how could the Giants let this guy leave? Week 2, cost his team the game. Yeah, don't
and
pay
admitted
running
it.
Backs. Yeah, don't pay running backs. Don't
also,
be idiots.
Also missed a touchdown by 6 inches.
Yeah, that happens. It's tough.
Tough for fantasy owners.
Not great.
Did either of you play Alvin Kamara this week?
Yes.
I did.
I did not.
He had like 45 points.
What a disaster.
You guys both played him and he torched your real life NFL favorite team? That's tough.
Thanks, Tyler.
That's tough.
It was really bad.
Thanks for that.
I didn't know I played him until I looked up the score and the one guy had 180.
Yeah, he's only had one player play.
I think I know who played for him.